AMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, what switching over to refrigerated seawater will mean to your bottom line, how to manage a transboundary river, and getting the big guy on your side before the season starts, coming up in this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Improving the quality of sockeye caught in Bristol Bay has been a top priority for groups like the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association and the Bristol Bay Economic Development Association for the past couple of years. They've helped get ice to the fishing grounds and provided some of the other gear necessary to keep fish cold. Now, with coming quality mandates, there's an increased focus on using refrigerated seawater systems. KDLG's Molly Dishner checked in with fishermen and fishing groups on how they're getting ready for the change.
At a recent class in Dillingham, drifter Casey Kupchayak, a Togiak resident, talked about why she's making the move to a refrigerated seawater system.
I want the quality of the fish that I bring to be the best that it can. I know that's what the world is demanding, and without refrigerating right when you catch them, it's not the best quality, so.
And it's increasingly on the minds of fishermen, particularly as at least one Bristol Bay processor, Icicle, has announced that it will require all deliveries to be iced beginning in 2018. But the question is how to get from here to there. For fishermen, there are a couple options, says Gabe Dunham, the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program agent at UAF's Bristol Bay campus.
You can have no insulation and no slush bags or anything like that and just shovel ice on top of your fish. That doesn't work very well because ice melts really quickly, especially in those holds adjacent to machinery parts of the boat that are hot. From there, you can slush bag or you can insulated slush bag, so you have ice that lasts a little bit longer. Then you could pay somebody to do spray foam insulation on your boat, put that ice in there, it lasts even longer, but you're still using ice. Then the next step is to do the plumbing and the RSW installation and have that mechanical chilling ability.
That's the real key, RSW. But those systems can be expensive and complicated. Local boats are less likely to have a system already, and they also typically have a lower gross tonnage and less horsepower, two details that affect how installing such a system goes.
Since the Bristol Bay fleet is less likely to have refrigeration, then it stands to reason that as more refrigeration becomes required, that the Bristol Bay fleet is going to bear more costs on average than the rest of the fleet. I think it's important to do whatever we can to prepare our local fleet to give folks around here the edge so we can maintain or increase profitability here in the fishery locally by working hard to make sure that our local fleet is competitive here in this chilling regard.
And if there is enough help in the transition, it could help prevent one common fear, that the cost of the mandate could exacerbate the loss of permits from the region. And there's another silver lining to the whole switch. Dunham says higher quality fish could eventually mean better prices. And although the transition may be difficult, BBEDC CEO Norm Van Vactor says there's another possible perk.
I see the marine support industry growing fairly dramatically in several of the major hubs like NACNA, King Salmon, and Dillingham, and Togiak to support the vessel upgrades that are going to be needed.
As for getting there, Regional Fisheries Coordinator Terry Mann says BBEDC has programs to help upgrade boats and install RSW systems, and also helped coordinate the recent Marine Refrigeration System Operator class at the Bristol Bay campus.
We recommend people look at their vessel upgrades as far as getting their boats ready for an RSW system, as far as like the spray rails and the plumbing and the hydraulics. It's not just a simple unit. Not to say it's a scary thing. Once you do the class, you have a much better understanding, and that helps because we're trying to make sure that the RSW units that get installed will last a long time.
Fishermen taking that class, like Coop Tryak, said it was the first step in getting ready to purchase and install an RSW system. In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online anytime at kmxt.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
This year's run of king salmon on the Stikine River is projected to be small, but still large enough for a limited commercial fishery near Petersburg and Wrangell this year. KFSK's Angela Denning tells us more.
The Stikine is a transboundary river that runs from near Wrangell into Canada, so the two countries share the king salmon harvest. Most of the kings are spawning at the Taltan River, just over 100 miles from the Stikine's mouth. Managers on both sides of the border want there to be enough kings to spawn for future years, and if possible, allow for subsistence, commercial, and sport fishing. Like king salmon in many other parts of Alaska, the Stikine run has diminished over the past decade. The low point was in 2009, when the Stikine saw only 16,000 kings. But numbers have improved slightly in recent years, and in 2012, there were enough kings for a limited commercial opening. And that's the same thing this year. The projected run is 33,900 fish. Canada is allowed to harvest 4,700. The U.S., 1,100. The state has called an opening for commercial troll fishing and drift gill netting in nearby District 8 on May the 2nd. Troll fishing will open at about midnight and gill netting at 8 a.m. They will be 24-hour openings.
And allowable catches on the smaller side, so it's something we're going to have to watch closely.
Troy Tines is the area management biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
You know, probably looking at limited openings in the drift gill net fishery for one day a week with possible area restrictions until we get our in-season forecast, so probably for 3 weeks or so, and it depends on how much effort we have.
Historically, about 30 boats start the season in the drift gillnet fishery, and more participate as it progresses. In the peak years, like 2006, there were upwards of 110 boats. That year saw the largest run on record at 90,000 kings, so the commercial openings were more generous. Records have been kept on the Stikine River since the late 70s. This year, fishing will be limited to only areas past the flats at the mouth of the river. The king estimate could change as the run actually happens.
Generally, the peak of the Stikine River king salmon run is through the marine waters, through the salt waters off the flats, is generally the last week of May, the first week of June.
If the in-season numbers are similar to pre-season ones, then Alaska's allowable harvest will jump up from 1,100 to 3,600 fish. Managers get in-season data through a joint tagging project with Canada, which is a mark and recapture program. The tagging will start in May, and Tines says it takes fishermen participation to help make it work.
Occasionally those fish will back out of the river and get caught in the various fisheries. And so if fishermen can just, they can keep those fish, no problem keeping them. If they can just return the tag to our port samplers or to Fish Game Office, that's going to help us in our assessment projects. And especially if they catch a fish with a radio tag, if they can return those to the Fish and Game, and we can reuse those tags, they're pretty expensive.
Sport fishermen will also have more opportunity this year. Tina says sport fishing will be liberalized starting May 1st.
And that's part of the U.S. have an allowable catch. So that's kind of the trigger for them. If the U.S. has allowable catch, then the sport fishery can be liberalized just in District 8.
Also harvested in District 8 will be king salmon from hatcheries at Anita Bay and Crystal Lake. They typically run a little later in May. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
Sitka held its blessing of the fleet earlier this month as the fishing community gears up for another busy season on the water. The annual ceremony bids safe passage to departing vessels and remembers those lost at sea. KCAW's Emily Kwong sends us this audio postcard.
Quite a number of folks have gathered for the blessing of the fleet. And we have assembled, I think, representatives of most every church in the community who will, lead us in remembering and respecting the folks that have lost their lives over the years working on the sea.
I just think people really feel like a power greater than this world, and they like to feel that their boats are blessed and their gear is blessed and they're blessed. And each day is a special gift of life, and I think it just is a reminder to, take it easy. Grab an extra life jacket or, just be careful out on the boats. And make sure you show your appreciation for everybody you love every day.
So we'll ask you to come forward at the reading of the names to place flowers in the baskets, and then they'll be here with us as we continue the blessing ceremony, and then we'll take them down to the boat and disperse them on the sea.
Deborah L. Arnold. Michael Lee Webb.
I went up, and there was the bucket with all the different colored flowers, and I'm a kind of a fan of yellow and yellow daisies, so I just picked a cluster of yellow daisies and gently put it into the basket next to it, and in my mind I just kind of said a little prayer that said this is for all those people who don't have anyone here to remember them.
Henry Chana Smith Sr.
I've come here before when someone I know died months ago, and they didn't die on the water, but I was just thinking of the families.
We've been asked by Amy, who is here, whose husband lost at sea, and that's the word she wants to use, and it helps her today. We love you, Amy. We're here for you, okay? Jesse Mills.
Amy really wanted her husband's name mentioned today, and she wanted the word lost at sea and for us to be there for her, and that just the pain, I don't know what to say, I'm speechless, but that a lot of us have gone through things where we've lost loved ones, so we're a team, in Sitka. The people are so friendly, so kind, so giving here.
God bless all the boats in all the harbors of Sitka. Graciously behold your service, that all perils being done away, they may, by a favorable course, come to a fair haven, and their work being done, may return to their homes in safety. Amen.
We've known as days to sing God's praise, then when we first began.
Those were the voices of John Stein, Ann Lankenau, Pastor Sandra Rudd from the Sitka Lutheran Church, and Mary Todd Anderson, president of the Southeast Alaska Women in Fisheries, who organized the Sitka Blessing of the Fleet this year.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KCAW's Emily Kwong in Sitka, KFSK's Angela Denning in Petersburg, and KDLG's Molly Dishner in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.